You're listening to The Word from Westwood, a series of podcasts featuring sermons preached at Westwood United Methodist Church in Los Angeles, California.
Can you hear me? Can you hear me now? Do you remember that television ad? It certainly did a masterful job of capturing the almost universal frustration for those of us who have cell phones. There are times and places when the technology fails us and we're left with this useless device in our hand. Yes, there are too many times, and I won't tell you which provider I use when the answer that I have for them is, no, I can't hear you, and let me out of my contract right now. Now, hearing, and for our purposes today, we'll use the word listening, is a behavior that we spend an enormous amount of time cultivating from when we are very young. We do all kinds of things, don't we, to help our children learn to listen. We have all kinds of customs surrounding when it is appropriate to speak or when we should be silent. The teachers among us, you all know what I'm talking about, right? While the case can be made for an approach toward learning which does not require us to sit still with our mouths shut, it never means that listening is optional. We also understand, and we've learned by experience, and we have been taught, that real listening can only be confirmed when the person who is listening is able to share with the person who gave the message some indication that communication had taken place, that they actually understood what was said. That's just basic communication theory. We also know, friends, that we're frequently challenged, aren't we, in our ability to listen? Sometimes we let the messenger get in the way of the message. Our disdain for the individual prevents us from hearing anything that they might have to say, even if it is important and true. Other times we might not be able to listen because we are distracted. We're distracted by all the things that are going on in our lives. Maybe it's the argument that we just had, the mistake we made at work. Perhaps it's because we're dealing with our own health problems and the health problems of those that we love. These are just a few of the many, many things that get in the way of our being able to listen. Well, a question that I have for us is, where are the places? Where are the places in our lives where it's hard to listen? Where we're having difficulty listening? I'm going to ask us just to pause for a moment and to think to ourselves and ask the question, where am I finding it hard to listen? Will you join me in reflecting on that for just a few moments? What is it that's come to mind? Is our frustration when things are said that just are not true and we don't know what to do? Do we find it difficult to listen because the things being said are perhaps hitting us too close to home? Is our inability to listen because we are at odds with the person who is speaking, and we put up these kinds of automatic filters which tell us this person has nothing of value to say? Let's face it, friends, listening is work. And there are times when we are up to the task, as well as times when listening is really something more than we can muster. Communication can be challenging. Communicators know that. Jesus faced the exact same challenge. He was a communicator. He was a teacher. He was a storyteller who clearly knew the pitfalls that he faced in proclaiming his specific message. Now, the Gospels that we have record instance after instance where those who were listening to him just plain old got it wrong. They just were not capable of hearing what he had to say. And this was frequently complicated by the reality that the words Jesus spoke were often at odds with what was considered the norm or the party line. And we are made uncomfortable when we hear dissident voices that challenge our safety zones. Isn't that the case sometimes? Our historic narratives of Western civilization are filled with many examples of this. It was certainly no different in the time in which Jesus lived. To listen or not to listen had to be the question that was going through the minds of that collection of first century people who saw, who listened to, who experienced Jesus firsthand. Listen to him. Listen to him. These were the words that Luke said emerged from the heavens during that strange mountaintop excursion that our tradition labels the Transfiguration. Now, up to that point, Jesus' ministry had been slowly unfolding. He had been about the task of calling specific people to be about the role of a disciple, of being one of his inside followers. We know that he had begun his teaching ministry and he was traveling around the countryside sharing with any who would listen. We also know that he was already starting to catch the askew glances from religious authorities who were suspicious, to say the least, of what he had to say, and they were, as we already know, downright condemning at times. According to Luke, Jesus had even been capturing the attention of King Herod, who was wondering if this man was perhaps a reincarnation of John, or maybe he was Elijah, but then the king thought, I beheaded John, so it's certainly not him, as the scripture tells us. The king was quite perplexed with regard to this person of Jesus and who he was. And then in the midst of all of this, coming up to today's passage, there had come Peter's confession about the new reality, the new understanding which was setting in. When he was asked who he thought Jesus was, his response was, the Messiah of God. Jesus is the Messiah of God. Now, those words were significant then, they're significant now, and they were important because in the gospel it marked the place where Peter and the others would now be seen as counterculture. They were outside of the norm because they were identifying Jesus as Messiah when nobody else would do that. Well, it was not long after all of those events that we have our morning story, the day when Jesus took Peter and James and John with him to the top of a mountain. We assume they went there ostensibly because they were going to be in meditation and prayer. And it's a safe assumption because when we look at the Gospels, Jesus had a pattern of retreating at strategic times in order to recharge his batteries, so to speak. Well, it turned out that this particular retreat on the mountaintop for meditation and for prayer was anything but ordinary. The gospel writer went on to talk about this fantastic vision where Jesus' face and his clothes turned a dazzling white, and soon Moses and Elijah were seen with him. That's what's depicted in our window here, the Transfiguration. We look at that every Sunday, and that's really the focal point. You see there right in the middle, Jesus being transfigured. Well, Luke made a point of saying that even though Peter, James, and John were sleepy, they were also witnesses to this strange experience that was unfolding around them. And they reported that there was a conversation which took place between Moses and Elijah and Jesus. And they were talking about his departure from the earth. Well, that was starting to get a little intense in this story, and then Luke goes on and provides a little comic relief with Peter's ridiculous statement about, well, let's go out and set up some tents. It's an odd comment, but this was not accidental with regard to its inclusion, because you see, Luke, time and time again, would give us examples of the disciples just not getting it, not listening, not really understanding what was going on. And then this strange story ends with the clouds surrounding them, and in the swirl of the mist, there was this voice that emerged, and the gospel writer tells us it was God's voice saying, "This is my son, my chosen, listen to him." Luke, in this gospel, only mentions two times when there is this otherworldly kind of voice that establishes Jesus' identity and authority. The first time, we might remember, we heard a few weeks ago at the baptism of Jesus. The second time is this transfiguration on the mountaintop. And subsequent followers have held on to these two statements that Luke included in the gospel as an affirmation of Jesus' status as the chosen one, the Messiah, the one who they looked for that would bring God's kingdom to fruition. The interesting thing for us is that these were also the same words that applied and were used for the anointed king of Israel or Judah. So these were words that meant something to these people, to be the chosen one, the anointed of God. Simply stating what this passage was telling us is that God was at work. God was at work in Jesus, and the early church claimed Jesus as Messiah. There was no doubt in the mind of the early church. And they also lifted up this simple instruction that came to us both at the baptism and on the day of the transfiguration. Listen to him. Listen to him. Listen to his stories. Listen to his teaching. Listen to him. Well, for almost two millennia, faithful have been trying to listen to him. And the level of our success has varied greatly depending on what has been going on at a local level, a regional level, and even a global level. Sometimes this process has been in full view. Other times, this process of listening to Jesus is something that has had to be done in hiding. Sometimes listening to Jesus has been mainstream. Sometimes listening to Jesus has definitely been counterculture. Now, regardless of place or of time, friends, listening to Jesus, living out his teaching, it's something that requires courage. It requires courage. And courage is something we've been reflecting on now for a number of weeks, on what it means to be courageous, what kind of courage is needed for this day in which we live, as well as the many obstacles that get in our way. We have pondered over these weeks where the source of this courage might be found. And today, in wrapping this discussion all together, we're given a clear instruction and statement by the gospel writer. Listen to Jesus. Listen to him. That's where we find our courage. And we hold tightly to this, even though we know that listening to Jesus is really a very challenging task. Our modern history is filled with people who have had a lot to say, lots and lots of words. Some of these voices have shown great enlightenment, and they have served to build up the human family in marvelous ways. Other voices have brought out the worst in the human family, fostering atrocities that still have a hold on our collective psyche. It is unnerving, to say the least, friends, when we come to the realization that our human family is just as capable of following a Hitler as we are a Gandhi. It is a difficult proposition to realize that followers of Jesus have demonstrated a great ability to be seduced by the forces of injustice and oppression even to this day. And why does this happen? Why is that the case? Well, a response to that might be because when all is said and done, we really are not sure that we want to listen to Jesus. Do we want to listen to Jesus? We're happy, it seems, to profess Christian faith, especially when it says that we are a forgiven people, that we are redeemed by God's grace, and that there is life beyond life when we will be fully present of God. We love the notion that we can go to God in prayer, And that God's Spirit, we are told and taught and believe, is here working with us right now. But friends, when we're honest, we really are not so enthusiastic about Jesus' teaching. We like to nod our head in agreement with those two simple statements that we lift up frequently, that we're to love God and that we are to love neighbor. We might even all be in agreement that that is an absolutely wonderful and compelling aspiration. But friends, we know that our collective behavior tells a much different story. Because it seems we are more comfortable when faith is adapted to our norms and our expectations and our comfort zones. Jesus, unfortunately or fortunately, depending on how we choose to look at it, and depending upon our given perspective, could care less about our comfort zones. So as we move ahead into the Lenten season and reflect on this topic of courage that we've been considering, where are the places that Jesus is stretching us right now as his followers? Where are those places? How do our actions suggest that we are responding to that stretching and that we are actually choosing to listen to Jesus instead of all the other voices which are out there? Voices which honestly sometimes masquerade as voices of faith, but when we listen to the message and we inspect it closely, we know better. You see, friends, I believe we're living in a time when we are coming to a realization, and it's a realization that followers of Jesus have had at many points in history, where we understand that those who have chosen to follow Jesus are most robust, experience the most vibrancy when it is not the norm. That's where a movement finds its power. And following Jesus has always been at its best when it is a movement and not an institution. When we rely too much on the institution, it becomes very difficult to sometimes hear Jesus' words. But when we realize that our call is to be part of a movement, I believe Jesus' words become much more clear to each of us. So I guess the real question that is before us on this day when we remember this transfiguration, on this day when we remember Peter had said that you are the Messiah, the chosen one of God, on this day, the real question, I believe, for us is, do we have courage? Do we have the courage to let Jesus be Jesus? And do we have the courage to listen to him? May it be so. Amen.
Westwood United Methodist Church is located at 10497 Wilshire Boulevard in Los Angeles, between Westwood Village and Beverly Hills. Sundays are at the heart of this faith community's life, and we invite you to worship every Sunday at 10 a.m. A wide variety of opportunities for all ages are also available every week. To learn more, visit us on the web at www.westwoodumc.org or call the church office at area code 310-474-4511. I'm Janet Hoskins. Westwood United Methodist Church. Do justice, love kindness, walk humbly with God.